Welcome to the House Transportation Committee at 1 on the dot, 1 p.m. Today is Tuesday, January 25th. Members with us today are Representative McCabe, Representative McKay, Representative Kronk, Representative Drummond, soon to be a member of the committee, I hope, Representative Louise Stutes.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect. Excellent. And so welcome aboard, Speaker Stutes. And today we have a nice overview. Actually, we're back up my script here. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Leah Frazier, and our LIO moderator, Kelsey Riker. They'll be joining us in person, it looks like, during our committee meetings to ensure we have accurate minutes. So thank you both for your work today. Are there any questions before we start up with our committee today? I don't see any, and I'd like to recognize Representative Gillums in the audience as well. Thanks for coming on down. Today's meeting is an overview from Commissioner Ryan Anderson of the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Congratulations on your appointment, Commissioner Designee, and always wonderful to have a Fairbanks viewpoint to represent the whole state here. Today's discussion is going to be about the STIP, the Alaska Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. As an overview of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the IIJA, I think. These are important planning tools that we need to know more about as a committee and as a state as we move forward. Commissioner Anderson, I assume it's okay if you take questions. If we interrupt, or we can wait till the end of a slide. Do you have any preference, sir?
No preference, Chairman.
All right, just throw something at me when you guys have questions. Commissioner Anderson, please put yourself on the record and members of your team who will be presenting, and proceed with your presentation.
All right, thank you, Chairman Hopkins and the Transportation Committee. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Commissioner Designee for the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and I was appointed on September 3rd, 2021. Today, we are going to provide the presentation of what is, you know, the staple for DOT in terms of highways, and that's the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. A lot of people otherwise know it as the STIP. Today with me is from DOT is Program Development Director James Marks, who will be providing much of the presentation for you today, as well as Deputy Commissioner Rob Carpenter and Deputy Commissioner John Bender, and Andy Mills as our legislative liaison is also in the audience. I will have to depart a little bit early today with another appointment pending. So, but appreciate this opportunity to provide that, as well as with what is has been a lot of attention and focus for DOT, which is the IIJA, or the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, and so we'll provide that as well. So with that, I'll ask Mr. Marks to come up and begin the presentation, if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Wonderful. For the record, my name is James Marks, Director of Program Development and Statewide Planning for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. As we mentioned, I'm going to be giving an overview of the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, as well as an overview of the IIJA. So we're going to cover a number of topics. I'm going to take some moments to pause to provide any questions or anything, so feel free to stop me. This is definitely meant to be an interactive presentation. I'm going to be covering some of the federal and state rules that govern the STIP, what we have to do, what the STIP is composed of, what that development process looks like. And then I'm going to take a step back and also talk about the Federal Aid Highways Program. There's a number of things that are in there that we have to do. There's a number of things in there that are relevant to understanding IIJA. And then I'm going to take a step and look at the year ahead and what are some of the activities that program development and planning is going to be working towards over the next year as part of this.
Yes, just one second. Representative Stutes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what your title was or what your position is.
Director of Program Development and Statewide Planning.
Thank you.
So, unless there's any other questions, please proceed.
Yeah, thank you. So the STIP is a four-year program. It's required in federal regulation in order to receive federal funds. It contains, as Commissioner said, all of our surface transportation program projects and, that are both federally funded and projects of regional significance. The STIP has to be fiscally constrained, which means we have to only put as many projects in there as we reasonably expect to have funding for. It is a highly public process, so there's going to be regular intervals where we're soliciting input from the public. The STIP is also approved by our federal partners, FHWA and FTA. On the state side, we have regulations that break project categorization and programs into the National Highway System, the Alaska Highway System, the Community Transportation Program, and Trails and Recreational Access for Alaskans.
I have a question, too. Looking at the public process that was in the second bullet, what are the requirements that you take into account, the public process, as opposed to just we took public input and we ignored it all, or we are required to take that into account? How does that look?
Thank you, Chair. We're going to get into a lot more detail about what that public process looks like. Depending on at which point we're engaging, that's going to look a little different. Sometimes we're sending things out through online public notice and gov delivery. Sometimes we're directly contacting mailing lists through our planning chiefs and things.
Great, thank you. And then is there a slide further on about coordination with local regional planning entities as well?
Absolutely, yes.
Representative Stute.
And I might be ahead of the curve on this one too, and so just let me know. Once a project goes into the STIP, is it there or is it maneuverable? Can you put a project in and then decide to take a project out? Or if you put a project in and you have funding for it, can you transfer that funding to another project that's in the STIP?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, the answer is we can, but there is a process for that that does involve public input. So anytime we do make a change to the STIP, that could include deleting a project, we go out for that public participation and do a public notice again. And I'm going to walk through that whole process. Yep.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is that applicable if you are transferring funding from one project to another? Do you go through the public process in a situation like that as well?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, the answer is yes.
Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you. I just want to recognize that we had a couple more audience members join us. Representative Frauscher and Representative Ortiz has decided to listen in on this important process. Thank you. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you. Due to the nature of project delivery, anything other than preservation or minor rehabilitation, project delivery times are typically 4 to 8 years. So we actually maintain a longer program of projects because we want to fully represent what total project cost is going to be. So there is also a larger plan that we maintain. So starting at the 100,000 foot level, if you're looking at the STIP, it's broken down into state programs and capital improvement programs. On average, state programs compose about 25% of the STIP. These include things like our preservation and maintenance program, our safety program, bridges, culverts, our transit grant system, rail freight. The capital improvement programs includes those regulatory programs I mentioned before, the NHS, the AHS, but that also includes the Alaska Marine Highway System, and that composes the bulk of the STIP.
Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize that Representative Hannon joined us at about 1:03 p.m. Any questions on this slide? All right, please proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So I think this is what some of those questions were directed at, and this is a busy slide, so I'm going to walk through it. This gives you a sense of, and this is a simplified version for visual sake. This kind of walks through the nature of the different cycles that are involved in both developing and soliciting input on the STIP. So we're going to start in the upper left-hand corner where we're identifying what our different needs are. We maintain and evaluate condition and performance of all of our facilities. So we have that when we're maintaining, when we need to schedule maintenance or preservation act projects. We're looking at socioeconomic needs. We develop area and corridor plans, as well as safety plans that help to identify major themes and trends, as well as call out projects of significant importance for an area or corridor. We look at military defense needs and local needs. All of these needs get put together, and we're soliciting input from various stakeholders, as well as from data sources. These all get put into a needs database, and where we have this kind of moving down to this yellow block where we're doing a needs evaluation. This is kind of a holding pin for where we put our needs, where we're evaluating, identifying where we might have benefit in putting multiple needs together into a given project. The red block is where we're going to see the most public input, and this is our call for projects. When we're getting into a call for projects, one of the first major steps, and I should probably caveat this slide, that this is general for how we approach things. It's a little bit different from program to program, meaning the National Highway System versus the Community Transportation Program. But it all starts with a call for projects. And we're going to go out, we're going to do an OPN, online public notice. We're going to go to GovDelivery. We're going to be reaching out. We're also going to publish on our website that we're going to be doing a call for projects, and that what the criteria for those projects, how we're going to be evaluating what those projects are. So at that time, we're kind of soliciting input for the evaluation criteria and triaging what those are. Then we get into our actual call, and that's where we're going to be getting input from stakeholders, from local sponsors, from our regions within DOT. All of those projects will be put together, and we'll put together packages, nomination packages. Those packages will include detailed scope, schedules, and estimates that we typically have our engineers go through and certify. And at that time, that's when we're having those conversations with the sponsors, our planners or our engineers, to determine whether or not a particular package would be competitive and whether or not the package would proceed. In the case of the Community Transportation Program, a sponsor may elect to proceed with submitting take our recommendation or not. And then we get into our project evaluation board. So once we have compiled all of our various needs and packages, we're going out to hold a board. And that board is defined in our regulations in terms of who's on it, what it looks like. It's usually a 1 to 2 day public meeting. We are public noticing that meeting. So we do want as much input in that as possible. Board members will review all the packages and will score and weight those packages. That will create our prioritized list. Project selection only occurs once we've evaluated fiscal constraint to make sure that we have enough room in the STIP. We're also looking at project delivery timelines in terms of if we have a 10-year plan, where are the holes that we're trying to fill, and some other considerations. And then we kind of move over into this blue block, which is the STIP cycle. And the STIP cycle starts with a brand new STIP. And this is good timing because we're at the outset of starting a new STIP this year. Starting a new STIP we start at the 10-year plan as our baseline, because we already know that we've got projects that are committed. So we already have a baseline of what is going to be composed of. Then we go out and we send out a notice both online to the public as well as to our regions to solicit input. This whole exchange between DOT, the STIP team, and all of our various stakeholders takes a significant amount of time. We go through, once we get all of our input, whether it's projects that may have come out of a call for projects in the previous year, or from preservation needs or new programs. And then we go through and we balance those and make sure that we have fiscal constraint. Not everything is able to be programmed. We have certainly more needs than we do resources. We're going through our same public process. And there's, especially with a new STIP, significant public involvement. We There are regulations on how we manage our comments. They all come in through a centralized source, and then they're distributed out to the most appropriate person that can answer it, and then we will make adjustments to the STIP if applicable based off of those comments.
Thank you. Representative Hannon had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My page printed out doesn't quite match the slides, and I assume it's somewhat of a printing. So if the question was, or if someone says, my project on the STIP, which of these boxes are we in if my project's on the STIP?
If your project is in, oh, excuse me, through the chair, Representative Hannon.
That's the kind of questions I get from a community. Is our project on the STIP list or isn't? So if we're told that it's on the list, where am I?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon. Absolutely. That is in the STIP, so that's going to be this last cycle. It's already been programmed. So when we're in this blue box here, we are working through not just new STIPs, but also any revisions to the STIP. But at that point, projects are in the STIP.
Okay. One follow-up?
Certainly.
So if I asked you, and I'm not because it could be a overly burdensome task without purpose, but if we said, what's the totality of the STIP? What's the price tag if we funded everything on the STIP? Do you keep the data that way, or is it there's too many moving parts and it's not until 5 years out and the cost of inflation, or is there, does someone in your office keep a running tally in the back ledger of what the total cost of everything on the STIP is?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, absolutely. We know that in a given year, there's about $1 to $1.2 billion in the STIP per year. That is not just surface transportation. There are other things in there, transit and other things. I would also add that the STIP is not the entire world of needs. Those are just the needs that we have funding for. So there's a larger list, and that's kind of looking back at the yellow and red blocks where we have other needs identified but are unable to otherwise fund.
One more follow-up. So you also would have a tally of that?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes. We'd have a list of projects depending on how far along they are in the development. We may not have the most accurate price tag because we haven't invested in the estimation. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative McCabe has a question.
Thank you. I think I heard you say that the blue block on the right there starts a new cycle. We put something into the STIP, and I think I also heard you say it's 10 years out. So if I start a new cycle this year and manage to get something into the STIP or on the STIP, it's going to be 10 years before it's done. Is that what I heard you say? Or before the project comes to fruition, however, whether it be starting or finishing or paying for?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. Not entirely. We did mention that we have a 10-year program because of the project delivery. The STIP is a 4-year program, and this cycle that you see here in this blue circle is we update the STIP about every 2 to 3 years. So we do go through a regular cycle. So even though it's 4 years, in the middle of that cycle, we're getting ready for the next STIP.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair. So. Also notice that it says up at the previous slide, we don't have to go back there, but it says culverts, and it talks about infrastructure. And I'm curious, there may be culverts that really don't go underneath roads. And so there might even be DEC responsibility, but transportation still takes those under the STIP, under their wing, so to speak. And interesting. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative. I've certainly got some questions on this slide. Looking at the STIP sort of as a living document, because you're changing it, and it sounds like you change it even more often in the 4-year cycle, that builds off the old document. You've got a 10-year plan that is also probably a living document, and that STIP sort of falls into that, correct?
Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And then you said there's about a $1.5 billion cost to the STIP at any one point for the current STIP that you're in.
That would be like a per year So because it's a four-year document, we're looking at, you know, roughly to the tune of $3.5 to $4.2 billion.
Okay, that's right. And so sort of building on Rep. Hanna's question, we've got, you know, capital budget of $150 or so million, and a lot of that is with all federal match dollars, and a lot of that is for infrastructure improvements that we have a 9-to-1 match for, you know, 100% funding situation. So if we've got about $900 million of federal money coming in on a $1.5 billion STIP, how does that impact the rotation? Because, you know, there are a lot of projects on the Fairbanks STIP, the interior STIP that Mr. Anderson, I'm sure you're familiar with, so feel free to use any anecdotes that I can grasp. But if we're seeing a lot of money coming in from the feds in this formula-driven amount, for, and then we start seeing things like road refurbishments and repaving all over the place that are important, but then we have project advancements and commerce transportation corridor advancements and things like that that are on the STIP, but they don't move forward. How does that federal dollars, which is supposed to follow our STIP communication with the federal government, yet doesn't fall in line so often with where that project is on the STIP or being on the STIP? Can you sort of dovetail that for us and make those align in my mind?
Sure, Chair Hopkins. There's a lot to unpack there. So there's at the tail end of this process that you see here is basically those updates that I think you're talking about, where we might need to make a change to the STIP or advance something in the STIP. We're certainly making changes beyond just every new STIP. There are project delivery things that happen all along the way where something needs to be moved forward or moved back. So depending on the size of the change, if it is not significant, meaning we might just be moving schedule or changing a de minimis amount of funding, we can do that with an administrative modification, which is we can do just within DOT. It's a relatively quick process, so we have the ability to move things in, but it has to be within the STIP. The longer process is called an amendment, and a STIP amendment. And with those, that is anytime we're adding a project to the four-year plan that isn't there, deleting a project that is in the four-year plan, making a change to the scope, or having a remarkable cost increase. It depends on the size of the project, but on average, about 25 to 30% project increase. We would need to go through a full amendment. And then this, when you see it starts the whole public involvement cycle again, where we're going back out to the public just to show that we're making a notable change, and we note what those changes are in the STIP when we're going back out.
Thank you. I think I follow that. Looking at the transparency of this process, if a constituent comes to a representative hand and then says, is my project on the STIP, is there a place that she can point and say, go to, you know, this website and find it there in the process, and then how do we track that along as an open and transparent process for the public?
Absolutely, Chair. The STIP is a published document, so all of the active projects that are in the STIP are published out on our website. And I can certainly provide that after the fact, but anytime, that's just going to show you not only the most current STIP, but also every other historical version that had gone through all those changes that I just described.
Thank you. Representative McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through the chair, thank you, Mr. Marks, for being here today and giving us this presentation. I guess I just want to try to relate this system in real terms. Can you tell the committee, what did we do before we had STIP? Did we just do the red box process and then we could shovel ready, go build a road or whatever? And just to get some relative reality here, what's the biggest project that's currently in STIP in the state? And have you completed a project out of STIP yet? What's the biggest project you've completed out of STIP? Maybe you could kind of detail that so we can get a feel for how this works.
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative McKay, the STIP has been around for decades. I think the difference is that we're starting, to Chair Hopkins' point, trying to provide more transparency in the way a project makes its way into our program. So some of this is just an education to the public about how do they get involved? What are the entry points into the state process? It can certainly seem from the outside a bit nebulous because there, as you can see, there are a number of steps. In terms of project size, you know, where right now we've got the Cooper Landing Bypass suite of projects that are in the STIP that, you know, are in excess of $500 million, depending on what, you know, how you add up all those various pieces.
Kind of looked like it was a new project or a new program, but okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a quick question. And we have a mine kind of coming, you know, in process and stuff. And you know, we've had lots of public meetings over it and stuff. And there's lots of rumors out there about how the mine's pushing projects faster and faster. But in reality, that's really not true because some of the projects would be in the STIP already that are slated to probably, you know, get online here and be fixed. So we could, you know, if I could figure out a way to do that so I could share that with people. The fact is that the mine didn't push these projects faster. These are already in the STIP. They've already been in the process. That would be really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. And a follow-up on that. Yeah. There was the Tetlin mine, the drive to Fairbanks, is certainly a hot-button item back home. The plan was for, you know, over what, a number of years or a 10-year period or something like that to build these 18 passing lanes for this mine along the Richardson corridor to Fairbanks. But it was accelerated through finding additional funds that I'm assuming is federal funds. And so it did get accelerated. And so those items were picked and moved up. Is that sort of correct? Even if they were on the STIP?
Chair Hopkins, that's correct. Yes.
And can you talk to us about that process that allowed you to jump orders in the STIP for a project that might be higher demands in the next 4 or 5 years?
Chair, certainly. We, you know, that's something that we're looking at very closely right now, obviously, with the potential influx of funds, is what are the various scenarios that are available to the state, whether it's advancing projects, working with stakeholders to identify additional needs to build that database back up. So there's certainly a number of kind of different policy level things. I don't know if the commissioner has any thoughts on.
Oh well, thank you. You can proceed. Unless there's further questions on that slide. Thank you.
Great. So from here, I'm going to pivot slightly and talk about the Federal Aid Highways Program. We thought this was important both for understanding the constraints and the requirements of the STIP, since so much of our program is federal, but also this will help as kind of a baseline understanding of what does IIJA mean. So all along the way as we're walking through this, I'm going to be correlating this to what each one of these different terms or concepts means in IIJA. So maybe that might help, but certainly willing to answer any questions. The Federal Aid Highways Program is dubbed federally assisted, state administered. It is tied to specific systems and programs, and state and local agencies pay for the maintenance and the match requirements. The Federal Highways Administration, or FHWA, establishes national highway policy, regulations, guidance. They also approve state proposals, so in this instance, that could be the STIP, which they have an approval step for, and they also distribute the funds and they pay the states. State and locals are responsible for project conception, planning, design, construction, as well as maintenance and operations.
Please proceed.
So in the Federal Aid Highways Program, there's six major steps, 4 A's and 2 O's. And it can be confusing when you hear some of these terms because which one of these actually means a dollar when we're talking about how much is in the state or available to the state. So starting at the top, there's two United States Congress actions where they authorize and appropriate. Authorization is the law that authorizes transportation programs. So in this instance, that is IIJA. That's the authorization. That's where we have a list of all of the approved programs and what those distributions look like. That typically happens on a five-year basis. So the appropriation, that authorization is good from FY 22 to 26. Every year they pass an Appropriations Act, and that is where they're actually assigning dollars, money for these programs. You can also call that their budget. So when they aren't able to pass a budget or they continue to operate through what they call a series of continuing resolutions, we don't get full year funding until that full year's appropriation has been passed. From there, it goes to the U.S. DOT, Federal Highways Administration, for apportionment. And I'll talk more about each one of these terms also. But apportionment is statutory in nature and is composed of six main apportionment programs. So when folks hear about funding, that's one of the numbers they're usually looking at, things like the National Highways Program or Surface Transportation Program. Allocations are any other funding that is not in statute. So those are things that usually are in laws or in other types, type of document that lists out how funding is distributed, how much, where the authority comes from. And I'll give you some examples of what some of those are. Obligation is a term that is a bit nebulous, and I'll come back to that one at the tail end. Outlays are relatively straightforward. It is a reimbursement program. So once we get an agreement, that promise to pay from the federal government, we're accruing expenses and then issuing reimbursements, and that's their outlays where they're actually paying the state for those services.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Mr. Marks, could you just, through the chair, I was just thrown off a little bit because you described the first two A's as legislative action, and then the next two, you used the term statutory in nature, which to me would imply also legislative action. Is that a shift? Is that state legislative action statutory in nature, or is it also a congressional action that produces the bill with the specific dollar amounts?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the statute is already established by
the first two,
right? Yeah. So that's the United States Congress. When when it gets to the apportionment, that the federal agency, USDOT, is putting it through that prescribed formula for how the money gets distributed.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so my follow-up on that is looking at the distribution of funding as sort of the formula for how the money is going out. Those formulas don't change in huge amounts from reauthorization to reauthorization in general, do they?
Chair, the apportionments typically no. We did see some changes with IIJA in the percentages, but I'll walk through that also.
Okay. Yep. So is our STIP based to follow, built to follow those reauthorization formulas? Okay, so it's not like just one list of all the items, although I'm sure that can be put together. We've got a FTA and a FHWA sort of list and different other types of wish lists from our municipalities, from our individuals and regions.
Chair Hopkins, absolutely. We're balancing the step not just to total dollars we expect, but to each one of these programmatic, how much funding we get in these different tranches of funds. That's right.
And so that can cause the apparent jumping around the STIP of funding different projects.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Please proceed.
So starting at the top again, the authorization is the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It is a five-year transportation authorization. In general, it provides around $550 billion in new federal infrastructure funding. Now, this is not all just transportation. Transportation is roughly half of $260. But it does give you other things. It's the largest investment in transit, dedicated bridge funding, clean water and energy. In general, we do know that our apportionment, which I'll get to in a couple slides, in this authorization is going to be about $664 million for Alaska in a given year. One of the biggest changes is the amount of discretionary grants that are available. We know upwards of 35 to 40 discretionary grant programs, and some of them Alaska stands to benefit from them, these new programs.
Representative Hannon?
Through the chair, could you give us an example of a discretionary grant program in Alaska that would fall under that?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, absolutely. There's what they call the invest or raise or infra, and these are grants that are of national or regional significance. They're in IIJA. There are two ferry boat grant new programs. One of those is for the electrification or and also for one for rural ferries that are out there.
Thank you. So looking at these numbers, we have a $664 million for Alaska and apportionment, give or take. That's per year over the next 5 years. And so that's in addition to the 900 or so million we usually bring in through the capital budget matching funds.
Chair Hopkins, no, that is going to be the apportionment, and I'll compare where we were before to next to this number to give you some relativity. Yeah. So moving on to the appropriation.
Hold on 1 second, sir. Representative Stutes has a question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. So if there's already an appropriation or whatever you want to call it in the STIP for a specific endeavor or project, do these discretionary grants play into that? I mean, can they be in addition to? If there's already a project in the STIP?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutes, yes, absolutely. If we don't already have the project in the STIP, we would be adding the project to the STIP. Depending on the program usually wants the project to already be in the STIP. So there's usually some front work that has to happen in evaluating these projects. We can place projects in the STIP without funding and call it something else that illustrative. That's right. Correct. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think I phrased my question right then. If there is a project that is already in the STIP, mm-hmm. It exists, would it also qualify for some of the discretionary funding, even though it's already in the STIP?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, absolutely, yes. And that's usually a baseline. What can we bring in additional funding for things that we already have on the shelf?
That's right. Whose discretion is discretionary in that line? Is the legislature able to pick those? Is it governor specific? Is it regional authority by DOT to put them and pick them from the STIP? Who has discretion over that?
U.S. DOT. So we would submit a grant application to when they submit a notice of funding opportunity. And depending on the agency, so for a lot of the ones that I just described, that would be the Federal Highways Administration that would be reviewing those grants.
So they pick it and Alaskans don't?
That's correct.
All right. It's
a competitive process. That's right.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Moving down to the appropriation. So this is that budget that gets passed once per year. FY22 federal appropriations have not occurred yet. We are currently operating under a continuing resolution. That resolution is effective until February 18. We are hoping that we get our full year's apportionment. What happens during a continuing resolution is the state would only receive funding commensurate with that amount. So we've only received approximately 5 months worth of funding. Rulemaking is still underway as well for a lot of the new programs. There's new eligibility for surface transportation and safety. There's new programs for EV charging infrastructure, carbon reduction. The PROTECT formula, which is resiliency. It's looking at making our app facilities more resilient to weather events, as well as the ferry capital and operating grants that I just mentioned.
Thank you. So we're still waiting on those rulemaking grants and rulemaking guidelines. What's a time frame, and what happens if it's you get the rules in August? How is that money set out within a budget for the state?
Chair Hopkins, that certainly makes executing the program difficult. So we're operating on a federal fiscal year, so we end September 30. All of our funding, the funding that has to be spent that year, has to be spent by September 30. It also aligns with project development and construction season. So there's a number of factors, but that would adversely affect the state's program. Typically, we see these budgets passed before the end of February.
Thank you. And so if we have, if we receive the, what lead-up work is DOT doing now to prepare for the rules coming in May or June and needing to pass it by, or start spending it by September?
Certainly, Chair Hopkins. We're always looking at different scenarios and what can we do if this, then that. So there's different tools at our disposal, from a concept called advanced construction, where we're able to start a project or continue the development of a project using authority and then get reimbursed after the fact by FHWA once they give us an appropriation and give us our full year's funding. There are also other similar tools, but that's the use of advanced construction would be one of the big ones, and that's one that we're actively using now.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Certainly. Chair. of course, I'm going to ask about this ferry capital and relate it directly to the Testamina, because I know that there's been an appropriation, and the Testamina has been in this STIP for quite some time. Are those funds still there in the STIP for the new Testamina, and how does this ferry capital and operating grants, I'm presuming when it says ferry capital, that too relates to the new Testamina?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, we are very hopeful that it does. They are still going through rulemaking for these. The program on the discretionary grant side that has the most hope would be the rural ferry. But it doesn't explicitly say capital. It says for services in a rural area. So this is one where are they going to also, so is it just for operating costs, or can we use it for the capital piece? It is in our 10-year plan still programmed there, and I believe we still have the state appropriations for those, yes.
Follow up.
Certainly.
Are you telling me that there's been no federal appropriations to the new Testamina, or was there federal appropriations that have been moved and not applied to the Testamina?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, no. We have, there was I believe, earmark funding of the tune of maybe like $9 million that has funded most of the design work. So at this stage, we're getting very close to getting to being ready for construction of the Testamina replacement vessel, but no, we have had federal funds contributed to that project.
Well, you've had federal funds applied to the construction of the Testamina. Were there ever federal funds through the STIP applied for the new Testamina?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, we do have funds programmed for the Testamina replacement vessel. It has not gone to construction yet.
That's correct. But there have been funds. There are funds there. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Carpenter.
Mr. Carpenter, should we expand on that a little bit, if you don't mind?
Please.
Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, DOT. James, I think he's trying to say, Isn't the TRV, we call it the TRV, Tustamina Replacement Vessel, isn't it in 24 right now? It's technically outside the STIP at this moment.
It's in the 10-year plan, right?
Yeah, so it's still planned. We were having problems with Buy America issues, getting to construction. We've been designing this whole time. So actually putting revenue behind the planning of the vessel, I mean, I guess one thing I want to emphasize is the STIP is a planning document, right? This is our plan, and the Fed said, great, you have a plan. Go ahead and spend our money. So we're all along planning to construct the TRV, but we didn't actually put any revenue behind it until, because we weren't actually at construction yet. So now we have all our Buy America issues worked out, and we're at a point where we're ready to go to a CMGC contractor and get to the final design so we can construct. So now we're looking at our options for programming the actual revenue into the plan. So we're trying to figure out, can we use this discretionary ferry boat revenue? Can we use advanced construction and pay for it over maybe 5 years? As costs come in, can we use any number of funding sources? I mean, we can use straight federal highway money. We just have to figure out the actual plan of what revenue to put behind it. So I hope that helps a little bit.
Follow up?
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So up until this point, you're telling me there's been no STIP funds designated for the Tustamina replacement. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, I'm not sure that is correct. We have had, like James said, we have had a federal earmark for design, and we have the legislative appropriations from the Alaska legislature of $222 million, I believe, of federal expenditure authority, and then we have the match associated with that of state money. But actual revenue, federal revenue put behind it, it had for construction, that hasn't happened yet. But it was planned to be, it was planned to happen. It just hasn't happened because we haven't had a point in time to where we needed it, because we've been had these construction delays, or we weren't at a point where we were ready for construction.
And it's not currently on the STIP.
No, it is 1 year out of the STIP, and but with the infrastructure bill and a new STIP requirement. And the process, and that we're at the stage of construction, we're going to move it directly into the STIP for construction.
Follow up.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I don't want to beat this dead dog, but just so I understand, there's been no federal dollars that have been in the STIP that were intended for the construction of the new Tustamina. That's what you're telling me?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, James, was the TRV ever in the STIP at one point and then taken out because of the delays?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Stutz. So that was to clarify my point earlier. If you were to pull up the STIP right now, the TRV is in the STIP. Because we have a 4-year schedule window. So the construction phase, what Deputy Commissioner was talking about, the construction phase is outside, is in the kind of what they call beyond, but we do have design and some of those other phases of work in there with federal money attached to it. It has, a lot of this has to do with fiscal constraint and balancing, because it was unclear in terms of development when it'd be ready for construction.
Okay, so, excuse me.
Clarification
follow up.
Question, certainly.
Yeah, clarification. Mm-hmm. In plain language, mm-hmm. Was there ever federal funds that were designated for the construction of the new Tustamina mm-hmm. that are no longer available for that very thing or that have been taken out of the STIP? Yes or no?
I through the chair, Representative Stutz, I would say the answer is yes, but I defer.
So there were funds, and they were just allocated to something else other than the Tustamina. That's all I was asking. Why couldn't you just say that?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, it's not an easy answer, for one. There were delays in the I didn't recall whether the TRV had been in the STIP enough and had federal funding applied toward it, mm-hmm. but there were delay issues because of Buy America and et cetera, where it had to get reprogrammed until we could get those issues resolved. So then you're right, probably the plan for revenue that might have been for that vessel were reprogrammed.
Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
In an attempt to not beat that horse, I want to ask the question a different way. Is there any money that is already appropriated for the testimony replacement, whether it's on the STIP or not on the STIP, outside of the planning money for the construction itself?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, from a state legislative side, there is state match appropriated to the tune of $22 million of general funds.
Okay.
There's also $222 million of federal expenditure authority, which isn't real money until we put money behind it. Yeah.
Right, right. So the only money right now, follow up. So the money right now is there's $22 million in state revenues that have been appropriated, anticipating it being a federal match for the construction of the Testamina replacement vessel.
That's correct. Plus, there was an earmark, I believe, that James had said of $9 million for design from the federal government.
Okay. And that $9 million has been spent because the project's designed. Okay.
And just to clarify, that is, we're spending that now. It's okay. Going to be part of the CMGC's final design process, so it's not fully expended.
Are you saying the CMGC, like the construction management general contractor that we passed last year?
Yes, sir.
Great, thank you. Sorry. And then, that's okay, I got you. I just wanted to follow the acronym. Yeah. Representative Drummond, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I found all these other numbers in last year's presentation, which happens to be in my notebook, from March 18th of 2021. I see that $8.6 million federally earmarked for the final design. I'm not seeing the $22 million in state dollars as a federal match, but I am seeing the $275 million cost for the TRV, as we are referring to it. But I seem to recall that there was a vessel replacement fund somewhere in our list of funds. Maybe it got swept, and it hasn't been reverse swept. I don't know. I'm remembering $60 or $70 million number that is a vessel replacement fund, not as small as 22 because that's committed to the Testamina. But does anybody remember that number and where we might find it?
Mr. Carpenter, you're nodding your head knowingly.
Well, I can wing it anyway. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drummond, the vessel replacement fund is as you mentioned, a fund for the Alaska Marine Highway System vessel reconstruction and replacement. It has had to the tune of roughly, guessing here, around $17 million that has been carried forward, which did recently get swept.
17?
I believe so. Something like that was left. The $60 million number, it's ringing a bell, but I'm not putting a finger on it in my head. So, but we can try and dig okay. where that number came
all
from.
Right, thank you.
And so, Mr. Carpenter, now that that fund has been swept, vessel replacement dollars that would get put in there, whether it's through ticket sales or other things like that, those just go into the general fund now?
Through the chair, the money that went in that fund were actually required legislative appropriation. All of the marine highway revenue goes in another fund called the Alaska Marine Highway Fund, which is different. It's for operating purposes. So any money in the vessel construction fund previously was from a special appropriation from the legislature for vessel construction. And just to refresh, there was $120 million put into the vessel construction fund for the Alaska Class Ferry. I think that's maybe what the number we were looking for. So those were two vessels, $60 million apiece, that were put into the vessel construction fund.
Okay, thank you. And that was swept as well?
I'm sorry?
Was that money swept as well when the reverse sweep failed?
Expended,
okay. Any further questions on this slide? All right, please proceed. Thank you. I believe we're on slide 10.
That's correct.
Great,
federal aid highway apportionments. So apportionments are usually what individuals think of when they're thinking of how much. These are going to be our main formula programs. Again, these are defined in statute. The amounts will vary from year to year. These six main programs that fall in there are the National Highways Performance Program, which gets over half of the funding, about 57% to 58%. Surface Transportation Block Grants, it's 27%. Our Highway Safety Improvement Program, Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality, our National Highways Freight Program, and our Metropolitan Planning Funds.
Yeah, Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, curious, and maybe this is the wrong place to ask this question, but the MPO, as many of you know, or most of you know, the MATSU is struggling to put together an MPO. We've run across what we think is a roadblock to that called MS4, which is the stormwater drain issue, which may preclude us from even putting together an MPO if any project that we put forward requires stormwater drain, like in Big Lake. Where would I put it? And how would I ever build it is spaced out as we are. So maybe, and the problem is I don't know where to go to find that. That's what I'm really struggling with, where to go that actually says that if you have an MPO, you have to have this MS4 stormwater drain thing as part of your MPO plan and spend oodles of money on that instead of spending money on the infrastructure, which we want. Similar to the air quality issue that Fairbanks went through. Similar, and we went through in the MATSU as well. If you're non-attainment, you'd lose STIP funding. Regardless of the fact that you're non-attainment from wood smoke, from a wood stove, and not from a car, so I'm wondering maybe if you have a little bit of, and you could give that to me later, even if you want, but I'm wondering how I find that out.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative McCabe. Yeah, absolutely. So we're engaged with the MATSU. My planning chiefs and planning teams are working with theirs to kind of go through that preparatory work and have been for the past couple of years. I don't know that issue in particular, but I can get back with you.
So the MATSU assembly is going to vote on a MPO next month, February. And this question still hangs in the air. If we have an MPO, do we have to follow the MS4 guidelines for any project? So I'd be interested to know that pretty quickly.
Sure.
Because I've had several assembly members ask me that very question. So if there's a way, even if you can direct me where to find it so I can read it myself, that would be great. Thanks for your
certainly budget. Absolutely. It's been very successful in Fairbanks, and while it'll take money away from Fairbanks and Anchorage, it'll be good to have another MPO. On that same sort of note, last year in the budget, we got the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Budget Subcommittee inserted some intent language to have regional planning entities for rural and unorganized municipalities to start creating their own. How have DOT been working with those, and have any of those been established, or how is that process proceeding?
Yes, absolutely. So, Chair Hopkins, we have had several discussions both with the Alaska Municipal League and Commissioner Anderson. I have also been speaking not just internally, but with some of the communities. There are a number of steps and challenges we've gone and spoken with. And I'm not sure if I'm getting ahead of the commissioner. I believe he's plans on kind of discussing what our steps have been towards that intent language over this last year. But we have gone up and spoken with folks in Kotzebue and the Northwest Arctic leadership team about what a regional transportation planning organization structure might look like.
Thank you. And is that discussion going to be continuing going into this next year, or do we need to put intent language back in to make sure you guys stay on task?
Chair, I believe that commissioner's intent is to proceed fully with that.
All right, thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Mr. Mark, through the chair, does the MPOPL, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, planning use federal term, is there a specific definition of the metropolitan, and is it based on population density?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes, absolutely. There is a federal definition. It is both population and density based, which was one of the issues with the MATSU in the past. They reach population thresholds, but not density thresholds. So the new census has given us a fresh look, and there may be an opportunity there. I'll have to look into that MS4 issue. So it's both. Yeah,
certainly.
Through the chair, do you happen to know what that population is to count as metropolitan? I'm going to presume since that's who, is it 100,000? Is that the cut?
Through the chair, Representative Hanan, I would have to get back with you on the specifics because there's different thresholds. Fairbanks area, for example, it's not at a certain threshold, but they're able to be qualified because they look at the borough plus also density of a certain area. So it also has to depend on the boundary. So the governor draws the boundary for the MPO as well as when we're talking about regional transportation planning organizations. He would be involved in that effort as well. So depending on what the boundary looked like.
Can I one follow-up?
Yeah.
So let me, can I presume then in Alaska, the only MPO qualifying subdivisions are going to be Anchorage, Fairbanks, Mat-Su, and does the Kenai Peninsula Borough meet? Does not. Okay, so those are our only three. Okay.
That's correct. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, our MPO in Fairbanks does not cover the entire borough by any stretch. It's truncated down to cover the more metropolitan area in the middle.
I think that's what we're struggling with as well with this MS4 is should it just be Wasilla and Palmer because they can do the storm drain issue where Trapper Creek, say, or some of those other places can't. So that's kind of what we're struggling with.
Great. Thank you. Please proceed.
Actually, I want to go back on that previous slide. What sort of projects differ from the NHPP funding and, say, the STBG funding, the surface transportation block grants, those sort of things? How do we know, because as you said, the apportionment, the formulas are not changing a lot. Are those where we can pick and choose a resurfacing program versus a new road or improving highway corridors? Things like that. Can you please discuss a little bit about how those different many, many acronyms work?
Yeah, absolutely. Chair, the National Highways Performance Program, that's the National Highway System, so it has to be on system. We have designated NHS, so these funds can be used anywhere on there for many different purposes. The Surface Transportation Block Grants are the state's most flexible funds. These are also the funds that have seen increased eligibility. When I say flexible, in the past, that meant that we could use them on things other than that, like locals and minor roads and things that are don't serve necessarily a federal interest but are of a state interest. So we fund, for example, our Alaska Highway System maintenance on that. Our preservation program is composed of about half of the STBG. So the Highway Safety Improvement Program is pretty limited. It is a data-driven process. We have highway safety engineers in all the regions as well as at headquarters that go through and evaluate, and that is primarily looking at reducing traffic fatalities and serious injuries. And there's a whole evaluation process that goes on annually. Congestion mitigation and air quality, I don't want to get hung up on the congestion word because that might lead you to think of traffic. This is really an air quality funding source. It's one of our most restricted pots of money that can only be used in maintenance areas and non-attainment areas, and it's limited in even the types of projects that we can use it on. Our freight program is correlated. We have a freight plan that lists out freight corridors as well as urban and rural freight routes that are significant. We only get a certain amount of mileage added to that, and that plan has to kind of call out specific corridors or projects that correlate with that funding. And then the Metropolitan Planning Funding, there are other funds that go to the MPOs in the form of the Surface Transportation Program. So out of the STBG category up here, that gets sub-allocated by population. And I'll talk about that in a minute also. But about $40 million on average of that funding goes to the MPOs. That's their capital improvement program. This 1% that you see down here is just for their planning. So that's their unified planning and work program.
Thank you. Representative McCabe had a question.
So thank you, through the chair. I'm kind of glad we went back to this, the acronyms. National Highways Freight Program. How much money does Alaska get through that, if any?
Through the chair, Representative McKay, maybe I'll go to the next slide because I'll get into some details.
There you go. Okay, I'll wait for that. Thanks. Stop it.
All right. Let's get to Representative McCabe's slide.
Guess not.
So this kind of shows you what the steps are in that statutory apportionment formula. It starts off with the Appropriations Act that gives the funding for the whole nation. In IIJ, that's about $52.5 billion in FFY22. From there, it goes through formulas that distribute to the states. Alaska's share is $664.3 million. Once we receive our lump sum apportionment, it gets distributed out to the programs, and you'll see those amounts here on step three.
Looking at those numbers there and the acronyms, the CMAQ funding, $30 million, considering that is more air quality impact than, you know, specific traffic mitigation and congestion, how does that work within the STIP? If we're looking at trying to alleviate, and I know Fairbanks has gotten some CMAQ money in the past for their wood smoke problem, as Representative McCabe alluded to, how does that work within the STIP, and how are those monies divvied out differently?
Yeah, absolutely, Chair. Some of the air quality issues that we see can't be affected by transportation projects. So we do work with DEC on public education and behavior. There are also programs. The FAST and Fairbanks area do have a more robust program where they're soliciting for these types of projects. But it is also our most restricted. So if we are not able to use it all, that's one of those apportionments that may not get fully used.
And is it done through DOT only, or is there in cahoots with DEC as well when some of those projects are air quality related?
Chair, DEC is involved, but it's really on the behavioral side. So a lot of public education and flyers and brochures and things and meetings.
Okay, and then that CMAQ, is $30 million per year for the next 5 years?
That's correct. The 664, this is just for FFY22, so it does grow. They have an inflation factor. So that total number that you see, if you ever go and look at the total five-year package, it's not distributed evenly among years. It's graduated based off an inflation factor. So we get a little bit more next year and a little bit more the year after. About 2.4%, I think.
Thank you. Representative Stoops.
Thank you. Thank you very much. To the chair, is there any requirement that you have to spend all that money within a certain period, or it goes back, or can you roll it forward? How does that work?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stoops, that's a great question. And one of the questions that causes confusion is this difference between apportionment and obligation limit. And I'll talk about both of those, and those work together. Just generally, apportionment is good for 4 years from the time it's authorized in an Appropriations Act. So it does roll over, but there's also another piece to the puzzle that I'll talk about. Yep.
Thank you.
Representative McCabe.
So now my question. The NHFP freight program, how do we do that? I assume that's like for 18-wheeler corridor in the lower 48 in Ohio, where there's bazillions of 18-wheelers going back and forth. What do we use that for in Alaska?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative McCabe. So we have a freight corridor that's established. We're actually in the middle of updating both our long-range transportation plan and our freight plan. For each one of those plans, we've got publicly involved technical committees. So there's a freight advisory committee that's put together that's composed primarily of industry leaders, Alaska Trucking Association, and folks like that who are providing input. These are going to be corridors that are connecting to ports to major airports, so like the major veins where freight is coming in and distributed, going up to the North Slope, is pieces of that are on the freight as well, freight network.
Hold on, darling. So you're saying that a panel of industry folks, probably with some state folks on there as well, determine what these corridors are, or they determine how much money is spent on each corridor, or how does that?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative McKay. Yeah, absolutely. They establish. They do not establish specific funding for corridors. So they are establishing the freight network. What are the priorities? What are kind of the long range objectives of the freight plan and things that we should be planning for? Providing that industry knowledge about what might be happening over the next 5 to 10 years that we might need to account for. But it's not there are projects, Leslie, if you were to go out and look at the freight plan right now, there are specific routes listed. There are specific projects listed. But they don't necessarily assign funding levels.
So one more follow-up, if you don't mind. Where do I go to find that? And where do I go to find who's on the committee? And I'm going to do three of them at once here. Because I know you're getting
go for it.
Ready to move. So
no, I want to get these fleshed out.
Is it just rolling asphalt over the road stuff, or is it all freight, such as railroads, ferries, and barges, that sort of thing, you know, because those all need terminals and that sort of thing too. So,
yeah, through the chair, Representative McKay, you're absolutely right. This is not just asphalt. This is all modes, recognizing that all modes play a part in getting freight around the state. In regard to your other question in terms of membership, and the freight plan, I can certainly get you the website where our current freight plan is listed. We also have a website for the current update to the LRTP and freight plan that I'll get you that has all the materials. Right now, those efforts are in the scenario planning phase, and they're targeting kind of the August-September timeframe for wrapping up. And then we'll also get you a list of membership.
That'd be great. I appreciate it. I'm sure Chair Hopkins will tell you if you can send it to his office. We'll all get it that way, right?
Read my mind, Representative. Please send it to our office. We'll make sure the committee members get it.
Representative Hannon, you had a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, mine is also on this freight plan since we've opened it up. It's actually not very much money to maintain a corridor. So is it just that this $17 million, using the freight plan, you could say $2 million is going to Dalton Highway maintenance work next year? And it could be that, say, $17 million went to a Richardson Highway corridor that's going to have a huge increase in freight anticipated in about 5 years. So the freight plan could say, the freight board? Do they make the decision, the allocation, or they just establish the routes and DOT looks at projects that says, okay, Dalton Highway maintenance could tap this because they're one of our freight corridors and we could use $5 million of it, and that's a DOT internal decision to make about how much of that money goes where.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, it's a bit of both. So they do list out specific projects in the freight plan that are important, and it is not just, just minor improvements. Sometimes it's particularly heading up north, we know that there's a lot of concern about some of the bridges and the load capacity or connections to ports, deep water ports and things like that. And I guess I would just caveat that the freight program funding, it is also on the national highway system. So typically we're going to see some pairing of these NHPP funding that you see down here. Because you're right, that 17.4 isn't going to make it very far with some of these big networks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McKay.
Thank you, Chairman Hopkins. There's a subject that I'd like to bring forward here in this committee meeting that I think is relevant to everybody at this table, and it's relevant to the entire legislature. I'm not sure when to bring it forward, but I guess now's as good a time as any. And it has to do with the Port of Alaska which is in Anchorage. I haven't heard it discussed yet this session. I attended a presentation in Anchorage. I represent South Anchorage, okay? And I attended a presentation where the Port of Alaska was discussed. For those of you who may not have been there or may not have heard about it, the engineers that study the port and understand how the port's built and the soils underneath the port, they've calculated that if the big earthquake we had a couple years ago had lasted 7 more seconds, that the Port of Alaska would have slid into Cook Inlet, we would have lost the whole thing, which to me is extremely alarming. I'd like to point out that if I recall correctly, they said 80 to 90% of all the goods that come into Alaska for everybody, all the way from Ketchikan to the North Slope, comes through the Port of Alaska. So it affects everybody in the state, including the military. I understand that the primary transportation system for the port is operated by TOTE, and it's a roll-on, roll-off trucking type system. And the only two ports in the world that use that system are Tacoma and Anchorage. So going to Seward, going to Whittier, going to alternative locations is not feasible, is what I was told. My concern here is national security. If you shut down the Port of Anchorage or the Port of Alaska for because it's unusable, you could constrain J-Bear, Eielson, Wainwright, and so forth. You could also create problems supporting the North Slope oil fields, TAPS. So to me, other than, you know, our day-to-day stuff that we need to live by up here, we really could create a huge problem. So my next question here was the mayor said that he needed $600 million to initiate a replacement of the Port of Alaska. And I guess my main question here to the gentleman with the DOT is this project on your radar? Has anybody presented this problem to you? To me, it's a lot more important than a lot of the things that I've seen today. Electrical car charging stations, solar panels, windmills, hiking trails. I'm sorry. I think the Port of Alaska needs to go to the top of the list. I want those remarks to be on the record. I want to make sure that this is officially reported to you because I think it's absolutely critical if we're talking about national security and shutting down our oil production. That's something that we all need to be really concerned about. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for indulging me.
All right, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you. I think James can respond a little bit that we're fairly restricted on the funding we're talking about here, that it's for actual port expenditures. It can only be used for staging and or road lead up. Isn't that correct, James?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, with each one of these, and I appreciate the moment to kind of talk through eligibilities of each one of these programs, because it, as Deputy Commissioner pointed out, it's because the majority of our program is federal, we're restricted by what those eligibilities are. And with ports, it's pretty limited, unfortunately.
I certainly understand that. So looking at opportunities to fund that $600 million, considering this is essentially a reauthorization bill that we're looking at the Infrastructure Investments and Jobs Act, and those formulas stay the same, limiting how much we can get for the Port of Anchorage in Alaska, what opportunities would the state have if Mr. McKay wanted to pursue funding for that project, which I agree is critical?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner. The governor has introduced the GO bond bill with Port of Anchorage money in it. I think it's a combination appropriation with the Port McKenzie, but it's certainly a concern that obviously for the state, and it's something we should have further discussion on. But this particular money is not really usable.
Thank you. McKay, Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. So to clarify that, it's not the governor's bill is $175 million, and it's for the Port McKenzie, Port of Anchorage combined. That $175 million, we or somebody needs to decide how it's spent. It doesn't do either one of us the complete good that it's going to need. So as far as the railroad and the port upgrades in Port McKenzie, which ostensibly is a backup and one that's not going to have issues in the earthquake, according to the engineers, that little amount of money does nothing for either one of us. And I think everybody here would agree. I think $600 million is a third of, or maybe a half of what Mayor Bronson needs. And it's not to upgrade, it's to repair the port and to upgrade a little bit the mud that slides off into the ocean. So I think both of them are critical to our, Port McKenzie absolutely is critical to food security and it's everything that Representative McKay said as well, but I don't know how we're going to solve it inside of this little amount of money right here. So it's going to be a thorny project.
It certainly has been and will continue to be. It is the port of Anchorage in Alaska or wherever you want to say it is absolutely critical to the whole state. We might have two members here who probably can bypass that with their own ports coming in, but for the whole health of the state, it is a critical project and something that's been on the blocks for a long time. And hopefully we can find some federal money and some state dollars in the future to support the infrastructure that we do need going forward. Any other questions on this slide? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. I think this question is for Mr. Carpenter as opposed to you, Mr. Marks, because it's clear. I don't need to ask if it's on the STIP because the Port of Anchorage wouldn't qualify. But we're not the only state with major port issues, and I've heard from harbor directors and port directors for the 3 years I've been in office about our backlog of maintenance and needs all across the state. We just happen to have a couple of really big ones with really big needs. So are there virtually no federal funds to do port issues? And how do, you know, how's the Port of Tacoma and Seattle and Los Angeles fund their ongoing maintenance needs? Is it commercial users are paying direct taxes for it? Or, you know, we're just so used to in Alaska having so much of our needs met by federal dollars and we're matching a little piece of it. So could you shine a little light on that of how they do it in other ports that clearly have $600 million in need on an ongoing basis?
It's a great question. Rob Carpenter, DOT. I'm not sure I know the actual answer. Like you said, the throughput at these ports is ginormous, right? So they're significant revenue sources for them versus Alaska and or our other smaller ports throughout the whole state. I don't know if you had any you could add to that, James.
Yeah, I would just add, James Marks, DOT, but through our regular formula funds, there's not, but we did also mention the discretionary grants. There are some opportunities for port work there. But I think that to your point, Vice Chair Hannon, that it is a lot of it is state funded, in combination with some of these grant opportunities.
Thank you. Representative McCabe.
I think I can answer a little bit of your question. No port makes money. Period. They make money off of the land that they have if they're making money at all. But even the Port of Long Beach, which I visited this summer, I think 20 million TDUs go through there a year. Is it 200 million? There's a lot of TDUs. TDUs is the equivalent of a 20-foot Connex trailer, if you will. And even they are struggling with money. They have a combined, they have an agreement with the Port of Los Angeles as well. So one of the things I think you know or you will hear about, the governor and some of us would like to see a regional port authority where instead of doing this silo thing where we're each working against each other, we all work together. Fairbanks is going to be included in that because if we finish the railroad, Fairbanks is part of Port McKenzie area. We can get things there in a day, so Eielson and all that sort of stuff. So it makes sense to quit fighting over the resources, limited resources, and form a regional port authority that can actually find a way to mitigate some of the losses, if you will, or some of the issues that we're facing. And frankly, Assemblyman Sumner said it best when he was talking to the Mat-Su Borough Assembly. He said he can't think of a worse group in the world to manage the Port McKenzie port than the Borough Assembly. And it's sort of the same with us because we change out a certain number of our people every year. And so maybe we need to have professionals step in and have a regional port authority that makes sense for Alaska instead of for Anchorage and Mat-Su and Fairbanks and Seward and Nome, who just got $200 million for a deepwater port.
Well, certainly, Representative McCabe, we did have a port authority for a long time that included a number of municipalities, and I think the Mat-Su municipality was part of it as well, when Fairbanks, Mat-Su, Valdez, and Denali as well were included in that. And I don't know if that framework is still around. It was, of course, for a gas line, which would be a different port issue, but regional planning and cooperation among our state is certainly something we deal with in here more than many committees. Representative Drummond.
I think Representative McCabe's got a great idea. Where I grew up, the port of New York was managed by the port it's called the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. If two states can work together, I think several boroughs can easily find a way to do that. Thank you.
Let's get a bill drafted. All right, next slide.
Thank you. So this slide, slide 12 here, gives you a sense of how much more. We break it out by apportioned and allocated. I didn't talk specifically about allocated because I wanted to dive into apportionments a little bit so we can get a sense. This is one of those things that we do know. We have been not given our full year's apportionment because the appropriation, the budget hasn't been passed, but we know what those amounts are going to be. So this amount is $664.3 million in apportionment for FFY22. And you can see that year over year, we're looking at about $120 to $130 million more in apportionment. There are other funds that come in during an Appropriations Act. These include things like HIP funds, which is the Highway Infrastructure Program, bridges, earmarks, ferries, and emergency relief. We don't know what that number is yet because we're still waiting on the Appropriations Act, the budget, to be passed. In FFY21, we did carve out some of that relief funding so you can see what the net effect is year over year. This is not all relief funding. This is just the funding that came through FHWA, not FTA or FAA. We are estimating, and this is a conservative estimate, that we're going to get somewhere to the tune of around $100 million that were of allocated funds. We know that we're going to get at least $45 million in bridge funds. We know that we've gotten this year at least $25 million in emergency relief funds. And there's still a number of other programs like ferry, the ferry program, and some of these other programs that we're going to accept funds. So in gross, based off of our average, which is around $600 million total per year before the relief, we're looking at about $150, $160 million of additional funding annually.
Thank you. And going forward in the bill, because this is a five-year bill and you said it increases, right. Do we know what those numbers are going to be over the next 5 years as well?
Chair Hopkins, the specific number, no. We do know that it's going to grow about 2.4% per year. In the bill, it lays out the total, so that first kind of lump sum for the whole nation per year. So we can estimate, but we don't have those numbers right now.
On a semi-related point, we are talked a lot in the legislature last year and this year about employment rate and finding the labor force. Is there money for workforce training within this bill to help keep up with the increased needs for construction jobs?
Yes, absolutely. There's funding call that's kind of tagged off. It usually comes in the form of allocated funds, whether it's on-the-job training or discretionary. So there are pieces in there for that. We would probably need to talk with our statewide design and engineering chief to talk about what are some eligible activities. But there are pieces in there for training, yes.
Is that money mostly run through Department of Labor or Department of Transportation?
The funding that I'm talking about is through the Department of Transportation.
Thank you. Any questions on this slide? Please proceed.
So the last slide gave you a sense of size of the total appropriation. This is where we're kind of getting into apportionment. So how does this break down? And we do know what these numbers are. And you'll see that the each of the different programs did not grow commensurately at the same rate. National Highways Performance Program grew about 17%. Surface Transportation Block Grants only grew about 13%, 13.9%. There was significantly more funding in the safety program and some programs like you'll see RHC, that's Rail Hazard Crossings, didn't see any growth. The Congestion Mitigation Air Quality also didn't see any growth. But we do have new programs. We have the Carbon Reductions Program and the PROTECT Program. That PROTECT Program, again, is the resiliency program. That one of the components of that is that we'll need to create a resiliency plan that kind of goes through and evaluates. So we're at the outset of looking at that, starting with what we call our twice-hit facilities list. And that's those are facilities that have been affected at least two times by natural weather events.
Thank you. Please proceed.
I did want to touch just briefly on our Surface Transportation Block Grant. I mentioned earlier it is our most flexible funds. So these are funds that we can use in a number of different places that otherwise federal aid funding would not be eligible for. This is also the program that has seen significantly increased, and even more eligibilities have been added. Things like wildlife, vehicle collision mitigation or remediation, EV charging infrastructure, rural barge landings, and waterfront infrastructure, travel and tourism enhancements. I would also mention that this is also one of the ones that did not grow as much as we were expecting. It only grew about 13.9%, as you saw in the last slide, and since the time the bill was initially drafted, we've seen inflation go up about 7%. So the net effect on some of these programs is not going to be as much as we were kind of intentionally anticipating.
Are things like tourism enhancement and EV charging infrastructure, those are currently, are they in the SNIP for the state?
Chair Hopkins, no, they're not. These are brand new eligibilities. FHWA actually has a request for information out right now on just the Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, on how they're going to implement. So they're going through rulemaking on what does a travel and tourism enhancement project look like and what is an eligible project under that program.
And so we're waiting on that guidelines. Then we're going to have to figure out how to bring in those projects quickly from around the state for soliciting the project for the year that might match that, and then get it out onto the street or theoretically out of at least the state treasury by September, into September?
Not necessarily. Okay. So when we're talking about programming, so we have our current STIP and we have a program for 22 and 23. So depending on, you know, project delivery timelines and things like that, one of the things that we will need to account for is as we're getting into our call for projects, and I believe Thursday we're going to spend some time talking more about that whole process in detail, is how do we incorporate these new programs into the project solicitation and evaluation process. Because when we're talking about programming these STBG funds, we're really talking about, you know, 2, 3, 4-plus years out in when the projects would actually be delivered, because they would still need to go through planning and development and design and all these other things.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Please proceed.
So I mentioned it before, but I wanted to give you a couple examples of what allocated funds look like. These are things like ferry boat funds, discretionary grants, earmarks, and emergency relief funds. We have not seen our Appropriations Act this year, so we don't know the amounts or any additional funds that might be coming. That's that number where we're kind of tagging a conservative estimate about $100 million, but that may be that is conservative. It may be well more than that.
Just back on that same slide, we see the discretionary grants, and those are the ones that are discretionary by the U.S. DOT. In terms of the other four boxes there, are we expecting that to also be U.S. DOT picking and choosing, or is the state of Alaska going to have a better opportunity to work with municipalities to find those projects.
Chair Hopkins, absolutely. So the discretionary grants is a competitive grant application process. The rest of these are either directly, and like in the case of emergency relief or earmarks, where it comes direct to the state, and other ones, the highway infrastructure program and ferry boat funds, for example, those have national formulas. Ferry boat funds, for example, is looking at all of the ferry systems and evaluate passengership and routes and number of segments and things like that. So there's a nationwide formula for those funds. But each one of these programs has its own method for distributing funds.
Thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. And through the chair, the emergency relief, is that something like a bridge overpass in Eagle River gets knocked out by an and we didn't have it on the STIP because we didn't know it was going to get knocked out and we have to do an emergency repair. Is that what the emergency relief kind of money is? And it's a pool sitting there, so when your emergency arises, we can tap it and say to the feds, we got a major corridor down because we've got an overpass that's been hit and we need to replace this bridge now and it's out of cycle? Or is that the kind of example that emergency relief is for and it has that big of a pot of money sitting there for us to tap into when where am I off base?
Nope, through the chair, Representative Hannon, these are going to be more natural disasters, the 2018 earthquake, Kenai River flooding, I think even some of the Haines landslide. When we get bridge strikes, there is a separate path usually for those. We do get state appropriations. So the on the federal side, when we're talking about emergency relief, it's on a case-by-case basis, and that funds get directed to us based off of that need. So it's not just a pot that's sitting there, so to speak. On the state side, we do have a federal appropriation that is, I believe, is just called emergency relief, and that is giving us the authority mostly as a cost collector when we do have things like bridge strikes, which happen more than.
Mr. Chairman, I am sorry to hear that in the DOT world, bridge strikes is a term that is used and you didn't even flinch. I'm sorry to hear that.
Did this happen in Fairbanks?
Yeah, well, as a former high school teacher, there's some basic arithmetic that I just think, bridge strikes shouldn't happen. I get airplane strikes and birds because we got two moving objects, but bridges are stationary. Maybe drawbridges, but stationary bridges, it just seems like we failed in the arithmetic.
Next slide.
So we've talked about appropriate apportionments and allocations, and you're going to hear this term when we talk about federal funding, that's obligation limit. And where do two the twain meet? So this is an analogy that I found that I like that kind of describes the two, where ob limit functions more like a catch limit. We have, in this metaphor, fish in the sea, and they come in different varieties. And this is roughly how we would see some of our, and those are apportionments. So we have, 50% of our fish are NHPP apportionments. 20% of our fish are SDBG apportionments. So there's, in this scenario, we have 10 fish in the sea, but we have a catch limit of 9, which is on average about how much obligation limitation we have. It's about 90%. So when we're going through on a year-by-year basis, we can pick and choose which fish or apportionment we're using. In terms of shelf life, we're not going to be using all 10 fish. We'd only be using 9. That apportionment lasts for 4 years. So it does roll over from year to year. So we have the benefit there for us is that we've got flexibility where 1 year we may want to invest more in NHPP, our national highways, or another year we may want to invest more in our Alaska highways or our marine highways. But that allows us to do that without necessarily losing money. It moves into future years. Obligation limitation, on the other hand, does come in that 1 year chunk where we have to spend it all by September 30. But we can spend it in any of these categories.
What was the four-year limit funding
that you mentioned?
That's apportionment. Okay.
So when we get this year, the NHPP, that'll last until 26.
Okay. And do we know how much yet we've received in the obligation funding?
That we do not know. We can expect that it's going to be 90% of that 664, I believe, number of the apportionment. So it usually comes when we're talking, and this is specific to these statutory apportionments. This does not affect the allocations.
So we've got 664 coming in, and now we're going to be expecting another 90-ish percent of 664 coming in every year for the next 5 years. No.
We can spend 90% of the 664.
Okay. Thank you.
Right.
Questions on that?
Just for the record, I've been trying to get the agency to go after more reds and less dogs.
Appreciate that. I'll take your halibut funding. Fairbanks will also take the CMAQ fish.
The next slide. Thank you.
So I know that we are going over time, but I did also want to talk about some of the major activities that we're going to be seeing over the next year. We know that relationships are going to be, have been, but will be even emphasizing more, going to be more important this year as we're talking about these new programs, particularly in the discretionary grants and some of these new eligibilities. So we're ramping up our outreach efforts in program development, statewide planning, and the department as a whole. We've released, I believe folks may know that we had a department survey that kind of went out that started to put feelers out there for what does the state feel that priorities and needs are. We're getting ready to release a second survey. This is going to be a bit more directed and more intentional. It's going to be map-based. You can get to it on your phone, and you'll be able to see specific facilities or areas and go through and tag those and say this is an important facility or this is an important priority. So that survey is going to be targeting our STIP list, so this list of public officials, as well as the House and the Senate. One of the issues with just these broad surveys is waiting in terms of the responses, so trying to put a little more weight to some of these topics and trends that we're receiving. We know that we're going to be, we have in out years, meaning years 24, 25, 26, we're starting to see with some of this new funding, holes start to appear in the 10-year plan that we need to fill. So we're going to be getting to a series of rolling call for projects, projects evaluations, putting notices out. So there's going to be a lot of that activity over this next year. So the hearing on Thursday will be, I think, really beneficial for everyone. I think I mentioned before, we're at the outset of starting our new STIP. So that's going to be a whole effort. And one of the exciting things is I think we mentioned that we were starting to look into it this last year, but we did sign a contract, and we are this last week started the implementation of our electronic STIP or e-STIP. So some of these are a little self-serving, but it's basically about efficiency and effectiveness. The STIP right now is managed. You know, we're talking about, you know, we mentioned before, $3.5 to $4 billion capital program on a lot of spreadsheets and a lot of manual work, and we need a better way of doing it. It takes a lot longer to be able to answer a question right now. Sometimes what the public may think is a simple question or one based off of the way information is organized and being able to make decisions. So some of this is around that automation of functions and tasks, more reporting. But one of the things I'm most excited about is the increase that we're going to see. So one of the main pieces of our request for proposal we put out was we need to have a better public involvement component. So a big piece of this is a public portal that includes a STIP map. And that map can be drilled down into a specific area or a district or the programs that we talked about, whether it's regulatory or federal programs, what years we're looking at. And somebody can find projects in their area and pull up the full details of all those projects. It's interactive. We're investigating, trying to get a public involvement component where we can interact with the public, where somebody could enter in notes or comments on a specific thing. The goal here is trying to get some transparency and some better tools for interacting with the public when it comes to our transportation program. So this is, I'm particularly excited about this, and there's a whole team that's out there looking at that right now.
Thank you.
And I apologize we went over, but I'll take any other questions.
I don't think you did. We still got 13 minutes. So.
Oh, okay. Great.
Despite our exhaustive questions, you certainly kept on track. I appreciate the time. So thank you for this rundown of STIP more or less 101. We're going to be hearing some more this coming Thursday about the STIP process and review of how our municipalities and various stakeholders are going to be able to put in their input to make sure their voices are heard and our communities have the opportunity to make sure that the local needs are heard as well. And we'll be continuing to delve into the infrastructure bill. In addition to the question from Representative McCabe about the National Highway Freight Program, he asked for some numbers and some stats on that, if you could get that back to me for the committee, as well as provide us with the STIP itself and for the different types of funding, even if it's a link, let us know that our offices know what that looks like so we can start delving into that. We need additionally, the 10-year plan, a link for the 10-year plan so we can find that. We need a PDF of slide 5. It did not print and it didn't show up well on BASIS either, so if you could get us that, then we could backfill BASIS for that. And follow up on my question about workforce training, the numbers for what's out there for workforce training and the different limitations on funding for that. If there are other things that committee members think of that we'd like to get from DOT specifically, let me know after the fact and we can follow up. Go ahead and shoot those to us if you can. Are there any additional questions or requests for Thursday's hearing from any members of the committee?
Maybe that, excuse me, Chair, the MPO MS-4 that we discussed as well.
Yep. Certainly.
Thank you.
At this point, if there's no further questions, let me see you all again on Thursday, and we'll go ahead and adjourn at 2:48 in the p.m.